So Parshas Chayesara, Avraham Avinu, after many nomadic years in the Holy Land of Israel, has no choice but to actually purchase a piece of land. Because you can live temporarily in different places, but you can't bury your dead temporarily. At least you're not supposed to. And so Avraham Avinu forced into purchase a piece of land, into asserting his ownership over the Holy Land of Eretz Yisrael now because of Sarah's passing. He comes to Hebron and he knows exactly the piece of land that he wants. This is the place that he's been davening for years, ever since he discovered that Adam and Chava were buried there. Now, he doesn't tell the Bnei Ches, because as soon as they'll hear that he wants this piece of land, and they'll hear why he wants it, they'll make life even more difficult. So Avram doesn't tell them. He loves this piece of land. He wants this piece of land. And he sets out to negotiate for it. The people are very, very kind. They're very generous. And they say to Avram Avinu, we'll give it to you as a gift. Avram says, absolutely not. And the fellow named Ephron rises to greatness overnight because Avraham Avinu needs him now. Avraham Avinu successfully negotiates and purchases this piece of land, which incidentally our enemies claim to be theirs, even though we have the actual deed for it. And we know exactly what happened and how much money we paid for it. And this is Ma'arat HaMachpelah, the Machpelah cave in the field around it. And Avraham Avinu does not, they say they'll be nice, but in the end, they take top dollar. Avraham pays an exorbitant amount of money, and that picks us up at the second reading, chapter 23, verse 17, Vayokom Sedei Ephraim. The Torah now comments on the postmortem of this deal. The field of Ephron rose, Asher b'Machpelah, which was in the Machpelah, Asher lifnei Mamre, which was before the plains of Mamre, Hasode v'Hama'ora. Avraham Avinu bought not only the cave, because in truth he was not only buying a burial spot, ultimately, he was buying the first piece of land in the Holy Land of Eretz Yisrael, which would become our eternal ancestral homeland. And so he buys the cave in which he performs the burial, but he provides the entire field around it. And the Torah says that when Avraham Avinu buys this field, it is elevated by Yochum. Hama'ora asher bo v'chol ha'etz asher besoda, all the trees that are planted in this field, asher b'chol gevulei saviv, in the entire proximity, in the entire precinct around it, the area of scrimmage, what was called Machpelah, all of this experiences Vayakum. So the obvious question is, why does the Torah say Vayakum? What is the point? What do you mean it rose up? What rose? Vayakum means to rise. Lahakim means to arise, to erect, to set up. What do you mean a field rose? What does it mean? So Rashi tells us that the meaning of Vayakum is to say Tukuma. There was an elevation, Haisalei. The field was elevated. What does it mean, the field was elevated? Sheyotza miyad hedyet, it went from the hands of a commoner, liad melech, into the hands of a monarch. Upshuta shal mikra, but if you insist on understanding it in its most straightforward or literal iteration, vayokam asada v'hamor asher boi, the terminology vayokam means that everything was raised up, meaning raised into the jurisdiction. In other words, we speak about a sale, about the transfer of property, Lavram lemikna, it was given over to Avram who acquired it. In other words, the terminology of Vayakam, to raise it up, is indicative of the field or real estate changing jurisdictions. Went out from Ephraim's jurisdiction, went into Avram's jurisdiction. In other words, on a very literal level, the word Vayakam means he bought it. But it doesn't say that. There are words in Hebrew for he bought it. What does it say? Vayakam. It says he elevated it. It rose up. So what is the meaning of that? Rashi says, euphemistically speaking, it went from the hands of a commoner into the hands of a melech. This is Avraham Avinu. Having said that, ultimately it still means the same thing. Which leaves us asking the question then, so then why does the Torah use the terminology of Vayakam if it just means Vekana? If it just means that he bought it or acquired it, why do we use terminology that it rose up? And so we're forced to go back to the first comment of Rashi, because it went from the hands of a commoner into the hands of a king. But what does that really mean? So we're going to get back to this a little bit later. I want you to know that the Radak in his commentary says that he just focuses on the literal meaning. He says, "Kam la'Avram le'mikne." It rose up to Avram Avinu, and it became part of his actual property. In the Medrash Agada, it says that the field actually rose. The Medrash Agada says actually a half an amma, 9 inches approximately. There was literally, you could see it. They could see the field rise up. Pretty interesting, because you go to Ma'aretz HaMachpelah today, you have to walk upstairs to get into the field. It actually is an elevated piece of ground. But the Medrash says the field literally, before their very eyes, as if the earth like heaved. It kind of like rose. as if symbolically showing how this land had changed, and now it was belonged to Avram Avinu, it belonged to the nascent nation that Avram was going to found. But that's what it says, and we'll come back to this. Vayakam is the verb that's used, this field. What happened to the field? Vayakam, it rose. And to whom did it rise? We didn't say that in verse 17. So verse 18 follows up, Avraham lemikne, which is actually what Rashi said. Rashi said, Vayakam asada, the field rose. What is the field? The field is the Ephron. The field of Ephron. The field of Ephron, which is in the Machpelah, which is before Mamre, which is the, we're talking here about the field and the cave, and all the trees and everything in its precincts. And all of this rose up too, which gives the verse 18, L'Avraham L'mikne, to Avraham as an acquisition. L'Einei B'nei Ches, before the eyes of B'nei Ches, B'chol Boye Sha'ar Iroi, and all those who come into the city gates. What does it mean, B'chol Boye Sha'ar Iroi, amidst those in the city gates? So Rashi says, B'kerev Kulam, this was a very public event. Everybody saw it. It wasn't negotiated in a back room somewhere. It didn't take place in somebody's private office. It was right there in the city gates, in front of everybody. Ubimayimit kulam, amidst everybody, and in everybody present, Hiknole, Ephraim formally gave the field, the property to Avram, and the sale took place. Incidentally, the archaeologists are pretty sure we found these gates. There are a set of stairs that have been recently unearthed in the city of Hebron, not far from Aras HaMachpelah, not even 100 yards away, and it is presumed, based on what the archaeologists have found, that that was likely the gates of the city. And we know that the gates of the city had steps, and more or less exactly what we describe here. The field being purchased, know exactly where it is. The gates, we're pretty sure we know exactly where those gates are now also, so we know what was bought. We have the deed, the document. It's printed, it's written in our Torah, and the same document is written in everybody's Torah, and the same document also showed up as a postcard from antiquity in the Dead Sea Scrolls. So it's like, it's proven. We have the deed. And we know where, and we know even the location, where it happened, because the Torah describes it, and we actually found that location.
Why the Torah has to repeat itself? I mean, we know already that...
Excellent question. Menachem wants to know why the Torah has to repeat itself. It's a very good question. Hold the thought. Hold, no, not for Fibringen. At the end of today's class. That's part of the question we're going to deal with today. And after all this happened, what then? And only after all of this, covered Avram as Sarah Ishtay. Avram buried Sarah, his wife, El Ma'oras Sdea Machpelah, into the field of the Machpelah, Al Pnei Mamre, on the face of Mamre, He Chevron, this is Chevron, Be'eretz Canaan, lest they tell us a different Chevron, a different land of Canaan. No. He Chevron, this is the land of Chevron. This is the city. This is the land. This is the place. This is the field. This is the cave. Very, very clearly identified without any questions, without any doubts. What does it mean, Va'achare Chen Kavar Avram? After what?
Acquisition.
After what? So here the point is, according to the Medrash, Avram Avinu himself buried Sarah. And he did this mipnei chavivus ha-mitzvah. This is the first time in his life a Jew is fulfilling this mitzvah, the mitzvah of burial. It's the first time in his life Avraham Avinu fulfilled the mitzvah of kvura. He had never buried anybody else before. So Avraham Avinu himself, even though we just learned that he was like a melech, he was a monarch and a person of extraordinary prominence and importance, out of respect for his wife and out of endearment to the mitzvah, Avraham himself buried Sarah. The Emek Davar says, on a very literal level, he says, Avram Avinu only would bury Sarah after the deal was sealed. A lot of times people purchase, whether it's a piece of property or an item, and we'll work out the details. The lawyers will sign, but now we have to move forward. We have to move on. Avram said, no, it's not going to be like that. And he says, the Emek Davar says, that it's a cherpa letzadik liyes nikvar bekever sheni shalai. It's a shame, it's a disgrace for a righteous person to be buried in a grave that is not theirs. And so only after the land has been formally acquired, only after all this is completed, then Avram is able to go ahead and to bury Sarah, his wife.
Does it say how long
it took? I'm going to presume it, it was one afternoon. The whole deal, the whole discussion, the back and forth, the big payout, the vayakam, it's all in one day. And in case you're still wondering why the Torah had to repeat itself and why it had to say essentially what it already said in verse 17 and 18. So now the Torah makes you wonder that much more, because verse 20 concludes now the narrative. Vayokom hasada, the field rose up, v'hama'ara, and the cave, ashabai, which is in it, le'avram, we all rose up to Avram, la'chuzes kover, as an ancestral burial ground, me'eis b'nei cheis, from the children of b'nei cheis. Rashi doesn't even comment, he doesn't even say anything now. Why doesn't he say anything? Because he already said it to us. In verse 17, he already talked about the Vayakov. So he doesn't have to repeat himself now in verse 20. But clearly, there is a repetition, and the Torah keeps driving home this point of Vayakov. The obvious question is why. Now, with regard to the idea of Me'es B'nei Ches, from the children of Ches, but Avraham Avinu really didn't buy it from B'nei Ches. Who did he buy it from? Ephron. He's one man. He didn't buy it from everybody. However, the Bechor Sher says very simple. In order to purchase a piece of property, even in today's day and age, what do you have to do first? You do a title search. You have to do government. There's government papers. There's taxes to be paid. It's not a... You can't just do whatever you want. Everything is documented. And so, sometimes when a person wants to purchase a piece of property, and even if the purchaser is ready, and even if the seller is ready, who could still make trouble? The government can make trouble. Why shouldn't they? There's money to be made. There's trouble to be made. Red tape. So B'nai Ches ultimately had to ratify the sale. The B'nai Ches had to agree that this very prominent piece of land, which was basically like downtown Hebron, was going to turn into a Jewish cemetery. That had to have some zoning, rezoning. Who did all that rezoning? Believe it or not, stuff like this was going on even thousands of years ago. And so, Me'ez B'nai Ches, since everybody played along, everybody played nicely, not only Ephron was ready to sell, for top dollar, but ready to sell. But the rest of the B'nai Ches ready to go along, and nobody said, hey, 1 second, you're changing, what is this Jew doing here? Changing the whole demography. Now he's going to take Center City with this big building and turn it into a cemetery. We don't want a cemetery right in the middle of downtown Toronto. This is, we're going to have a skyscraper built over here. But everybody played along. Everybody allowed. So it was Issa, as if Avraham Avinu bought it from B'nai Ches. The Bechor Sher further says, it says Vayakam Hasada, the field rose up la'achuzas kaver, which is pretty interesting. Usually, when we talk about burial is down below, but here we say it rose up, because to become the burial ground of Avraham Avinu, it rose up to become the burial ground. It was a step up in the property, and he says that's why it became the field changed from just a field into the concept of a burial ground, a cemetery. Now the Aruch Chaim says something very interesting. He says that the reason that the Torah repeats itself here in verse 20 of Vayakom Hasada only after discussing the burial, which seems to fly in the face of what the Emek Dover said. The Emek Dover said that the only time you bury is after the deal is sealed. And here it says in verse 19, V'achar kein kovar. And then in verse 20 it says Vayakom, the field went up. How does that work? So the Erechaim says that when it comes to the laws of transactions, from a Jew purchasing from a non-Jew, according to Torah law, so exchange of consideration is not sufficient. And even acquisition, meaning assuming the property, which is called kesef hachazaka, kesef is not enough. How do you actually acquire it? By usage. You have to actually, so to speak, use the grounds. When you use the property, only when you do that, that's called chazaka, only then is the sale complete. So he says, and actually we use this when we sell the chametz to a Gentile for Pesach, we actually use different methodologies of kinyan, including kesef, including exchange of consideration, including a handshake, including a document, and including chazaka. We ask the purchaser of the chametz to actually walk around and to assert himself as the owner of this new property, even though it's just a lease. The property is a lease. So he says, therefore, that's why this, on a legal level, only after Sarai was buried was the sale really completed, which does not exactly square with what the McDowell says, but that's a different approach. So what do we have to understand? We have to understand why the Torah repeats this entire four verses seem to be superfluous. And we still don't fully understand the idea of Vayakom. And what was Rashi's explanation to us? Well, it went from the hands of a commoner to the hands of the Lord, so to speak. It went from the House of Commons to the House of the Lords. It went from the ordinary citizen into monarchy, royalty. Avraham Avinu was like a king. So page Reish Samachei, the Rebbe has an incredible explanation, beautiful insight, which makes not only answers the question of Vayakom, but answers your question also. Why are we re-emphasizing, rehashing? What is the point here? Hiksha b'maskel l'David. David Luria, one of the very important commentaries on Rashi, he asked the question, and this is a quote from the words of the maskel l'David. Lo yodaina amayka omar loshen hedyat u'melech. I don't know why Rashi uses this terminology. Who asked him to create terminology that speaks of commoners and lords, private citizens and a king? What does that have to do with anything? V'tvei havenichel l'lameimer, he should simply have said, I went loshen rasha v'tzadik. I went from the hands of a wicked person to the hands of a righteous person. U'befrat she'efrain, especially that Ephraim, gam koydim mechira, before the sale, nasa sar al ha'ir. Ephraim actually got a promotion. He was promoted from the House of Commons to the House of the Lords, especially for the sale. Why? Because as Rashi explained to us earlier, that now that Ephraim was dealing with Avraham Avinu, when Avraham Avinu needed Ephraim, all of a sudden Ephraim rose in great prominence. Now he was held in high esteem. They appointed him to an official magistrate position. So Ephraim, important guy. Avraham needs him. Raise him up, you know. So Avraham, on the contrary, Rashi emphasized earlier that Ephraim was no longer a commoner. He was a private citizen. Now he became a somebody, an important person. And instead, Rashi now seems to ignore that and emphasize the idea of his being a hedyet, a commoner, and speaking about going to the hands of royalty. Va'achen, and truth be told, if you look in the Medrash itself, which is the source of Rashi, the Medrash doesn't say what Rashi says. The Medrash uses different terminology. And this is the actual verbiage. The havas devar inish ze'er. It was the property of a small person. V'isavidas levar nashrav. It went to the property now, jurisdiction of a great person. From a minor jurisdiction to a major jurisdiction. From a little fellow to a big person. That's what it says. Doesn't say melech, doesn't say king, doesn't say ordinary citizen, doesn't say private citizen, doesn't say commoner. It says from little to big. So in other words, that this is about a small person and a big person. It's about the jurisdiction of a small person going into the jurisdiction of somebody who's really prominent and important. But where did Rashi get this idea of the royal terminology? Why is he speaking of a king, a private citizen, a king? In order to understand the question we're asking about the business of Vayakum and Rashi's explanation on the Vayakum, so first, yesh lahakdim sha'ilin esefes. There's another question we have to ask you. And this is your question. Psukim elu. All of these verses, the verses from 17 to 20, hem l'cha'ere miutarim l'chalutin, they are totally superfluous. Not a superfluous letter. Not a superfluous word. Four superfluous verses which tell us nothing we didn't know before. Everything being said is just rehashing. It's a repetition. Had he moved me, Elov, it's self-understood. Avram Shilim is the Measada. When Avram finished paying off the dollars, he finished paying the price of the Lushusai. Even further, it says, and only after verse 17 and 18, only after this, cover Avram is Sarah. Now we're ready for a funeral. Now Avram can bury Sarah. Now? After what? You mean after what? After verse 17 and 18. But nothing happened in verse 17 and 18. Verse 17 and 18 is essentially nothing but a recapitulation of what happened in the previous verses. It's self-understood, the Rebbe says. We don't need the Emek Dover's big chiddush that you would only bury a righteous person in a field you actually own. It's self-understood, but Avram would go and rob a piece of land. If he wanted to do that, he could have done it to begin with. If he engaged in the negotiations, clearly and obviously, he expected to purchase the piece of land and only after to perform the burial. Self-understood. So what would happen if he wouldn't have these verses? Think of it that way. If these verses wouldn't appear in the Torah, would Hebron be any less ours? Would our enemies have more of a chance of dislodging us from Israel? First of all, they do it anyway. They attack us anyway. They deny our right to Israel anyway. The verses make no difference. So the storyline doesn't change. The narrative is unmodified. The facts are as they are, before and after. What do we need these verses for? That's the meaning of superfluous. Serving no purpose. Or so it seems. Borur, it's obvious, clear as a bell, Shakavana Bakosov, that the intention of the verse here, Vayakum Ste Ephraim, Lavram Lomikna, this field went over to Avram as an acquisition. It's not just about the purchase itself. It's describing the persona of this purchase. It's giving us some kind of insight over here. Something else happened. What happened? What happened in these verses that didn't happen in the verses before? And the answer, Rashi says, you know what happened? What happened is Yotzami Ad Hedyet Liad melech. It went from the hands of a commoner into the hands of a royal. What does this mean? Kasher adam stam, when a regular person, a hedyot, koin asada mechavere, nishra dayin yachas mesuyim ben habayla makoidmin ubein asada. There is always a link to the original owner. Doesn't matter who owns Casaloma now. Everybody knows who Casaloma's original owner was, right? You know, there's a house, a historic house on Center Street here. I think it's called McDonald House. Now they made it into a museum. But for years, it was owned by one person or another. What was it still called? McDonald House. Why? Because this was one of the houses that didn't get knocked down. This is here from the 18th century, a house that continuously lived in, so it has the original name of the owner. And it doesn't even matter later who buys it. It's still called the name of the original owner. Sha'arei ha'avoras ha'baylos el'akoyne neveh mikoyach haskamasa shalom eicher. Truth be told, the only way the new owner can get it is if the old owner decided to sell it. So by virtue of what is the new owner there? By dint of the sale that was made previously. It's not like the old owner is gone. The old owner is actually a part of the present ownership. It's only owned by the present ownership, present jurisdiction, because the previous jurisdiction released it. This is all the case when we deal between ordinary people. Ulam kasher melech kene sada. However, when a king buys the field, when it's brought by the government, so then mizbatelas lachalutin hazika shalabayla makedvin al sada. It doesn't matter who owned that building once upon a time. Now it becomes the House of Parliament. Now it's a royal palace. It loses its old name. You know, it's like the stadium downtown, the Rogers Center. What was it originally called? The Sky Dome. How many people still call it the Sky Dome? Okay, so they went bankrupt building it, and now it still has the old name. But that's when we deal with ordinary exchange, ordinary transactions, regular real estate transactions. However, when it goes liad melech, the original owner is entirely forgotten. And this, my friends, is the point. Avraham Avinu purchased this field with such a purchase that it was no longer the field of Ephraim that Avraham now owns. It went miad hedyet liad melech. No longer was it called Ephraim's field. From today onward, it's called Avraham's field. It's called the Jewish cemetery from now on. Because Avraham was a melech. And because Avraham was a melech, it was far more than an ordinary transaction. This was a transformation of a piece of property. Hence the term Vayakam. Now Vayakam makes sense. Now we understand what Rashi meant to tell us when he said the Vayakam means Tekuma Haisalei. Tekuma Haisalei, we don't have to follow the Medrash Rabbah that the earth heaved and it literally rose. That this was a different kind of transaction. That this purchase transformed the land in and of itself. That it wasn't just a change of jurisdiction, it was a transformation of definition. And from today onward, that land becomes ours, La'ad Ulanetzach, for all eternity. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help us that all our brothers and sisters should study Torah. They should know the truth. And when they'll know the truth, and when Jewish people believe in the truth, then maybe the rest of the world will start to acknowledge the truth as well.